Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
When you're constantly on the move, it's not just pits that break a sweat. From your armpits to your thighs and everywhere in between, new whole body deodorant cream and sticks from Shea Moisture are your secret weapon to staying fresh and confident all day long. Made from melanin-rich skin and packed with plant-based goodness, embrace a new era of freshness with whole body and stick deodorants from Shea Moisture. Find them at your nearest Walmart and Walmart.com. And when you do, your whole body's covered.
Welcome to the Friends.
Every time I'm in the zone.
My name is Dustin.
I'm Francesca, also known as Hey Friend Hey.
My name is Asante.
This is the Friend Zone. Let's start the show.
I'm in the zone.
I'm so unkind. Bring back those nights when you were here beside me. Unbreak my heart. Say you love me again. Undo this hurt you caused when you walked out the door and walked out of my life. Uncry these tears. Cried so many, many nights. Unbreak my heart.
That's right. Welcome, everybody.
Yes.
Sit down. Have drinks. It's 2-for-1 right now, y'all. Show some love to your bartenders here at the Friend Zone Karaoke Lounge. This week, we got none other than JoJo, okay?
Wow.
Joanna.
Wow.
Singing Toni Braxton's Unbreak My Heart. Now, you got to be a certain type of vocalist to even take that on.
And
you
know then what post
I'm saying?
It.
And post it, because never has there been a more fitting space for the black colloquialism, your arms too short to box with God. You understand what I'm saying? You gotta be prepared. You got to have a spirit of preparedness to even take that on. And we know JoJo got the oil. Now, it's very random that people who check the boxes that she checked got the oil on their voice, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But JoJo is one of the ones. It's a couple of them walk. JoJo got it. Christina Aguilera, love her, hate her, she got it, okay? Faith Hill, another one, she got it. You know what I'm saying? It's a Celine Dion. You know what I'm saying? It's a few of them that they got that oil on it. And damn it, JoJo is one of them. So want to give her some love and unbreak her heart. We dedicating that one to Donda's baby. Because right now, you know, I have never seen nobody's mama, you know, their mama's name be disrespected the way that it's being disrespected right now. So we want Kanye West and his mental faculties, okay, to unbreak our heart, okay, and uncry these tears and undo this hurt you caused when you took your ass up there, your wide mouth ass up there into the White House and shame the family the way that you did. So we dedicating that to Kanye West and the entire Donda team, because all money ain't good money. Shame on you. With that being said, welcome to the Friend Zone, your weekly look into all things mental health, mental wellness, and mental hygiene, because who in the hell wants a musty brain? None of us do.
At all.
Hey, Fran and Asante, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Amazing.
Doing good.
Did y'all ever watch Masked Singer?
Only when...
No, it scared me.
I caught some of the B's performances when Gladys Knight was on there, and
yes.
Then my sister sent me a text one night like, Candy about to win the Masked Singer, you got to watch it. So I caught up when Candy was on there, because you know I love Candy Burrs. So
I wish I would have caught up when Candy was on there, because I remember her doing like Big Brother or something. They were confronting her about being on Masked Singer, and she couldn't confirm or deny. But JoJo was on Masked Singer. She was the Black Swan or something. But I didn't watch Masked Singer. I just thought that was of note since you played her singing.
How fitting.
Cute. Wait, how does it work? Is it one person that's masked and they just keep coming back every week?
It's a bunch of people masked as different animals and stuff, and then there's a panel of judges that have to try to guess who they are each week, and they're voted, I guess, on ability or ability to keep the crowd from knowing who the fuck they are to how they stay. I'm not sure how the voting works, honestly.
Oh, so it's like multiple singers that are...
Multiple singers, and they actually do it in groups. So there's like... I can't remember. I hate not knowing what I'm talking about. But there's a certain number of weeks. They do it in like cycles, right? So there will be one group of contestants that will, you know, perform or whatever, and they determine who wins that or whatever. Then there's another cycle, and somebody eventually wins. And Candy Burris won. She was the first female winner.
Because they couldn't figure out who she was.
Nope. They couldn't figure out who she was.
Okay, that makes sense.
And I believe that the viewers vote too, I think. Somebody votes. I don't listen.
Yeah.
All I knew was Candy was on there and she was doing good. And I arrived late to her party. So I caught up and then was with it. But I never invested the time to really, you know, be a part of the voting experience or any of that shit. I just wanted her to win.
Yeah.
And she did.
Yeah.
I can't watch it. The costumes are weird.
Yeah, it definitely you know, I'm scary.
Yeah, like I was like, so, okay. Yeah. And then did y'all see there's like another show where people dress up like that, similar, but they dress up as like different beasts, and it's a new dating show on Netflix.
Now that's just ridiculous.
And you go on a date dressed up in costumes because the point is you have to connect with me. Yeah. It got real dark, right? You got to connect with me. Based on how I make you feel and not how I look. So we
how
both dressed up as beasts.
How am I connect with somebody scaring
beasts.
The shit out of me
in costume?
But we're both dressed as beasts. So it's like, you know, equal opportunity here. And
so it's a costume party.
It basically, furries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. I mean, I ain't trying to yuck nobody's yum. If you in the furries, get your thing off. You know what I'm saying? But that just ain't, that don't make me hard.
Now, why the furries got to be in
it? Why the furries got to get in it?
Yeah, but I mean, how the fuck they expect? But I guess, you know what, as crazy and two-faced and weird as these motherfuckers out here are now, you might as well have one.
It's cool, though. I will say
stuff.
I watched one episode out of curiosity, and it was cool because the people really did connect on conversation and just like what the vibe the person was giving off. And then when they took off the beast and met each other, they was like, oh shit, and you fine as hell. Boom.
Friend, how
out.
Can you have a serious conversation with somebody in a costume? That's my thing. Like I'm all with
someone
the experimental
blood
nature, you know what I'm saying? But what the fuck you about to talk about? In these costumes, that's gonna make me be able to connect.
What
we gonna talk
up.
About?
Netflix beasts. Wait, is that
how
what
we
it's
gonna
called?
Talk about the Taliban taking over and shit? You know what I'm saying? How we gonna talk about real things that need to be discussed?
You
social
know
justice
about,
issues.
You remember back on Housewives when LaToya was on there and Kenya was trying to reprimand her and she had on that outfit?
Yeah.
And LaToya just kept laughing at her. Like, that's
see,
all I'm
look,
thinking about.
Like, this is one
some
of
costumes.
The girls' costumes.
See, like...
Oh, my God. She that looked like... That's who Lil Nas X was doing that lap dance on, ain't it?
Wow. This looks completely ridiculous.
It's called Netflix Sex... For those who are interested, it's called Netflix Sexy Beast, and it is absolutely ridiculous.
I want to talk to the producers, because if y'all just giving budgets away like that, I got some ideas for y'all. Let's talk and produce some shows, because this
well,
is
look,
getting like...
While we're talking about things that we're watching, I would like to take the time out to thank our sisters over at Getting Grown Pod. I actually was a guest on this week's episode.
I saw the tweet.
Yes, it was the TV Talk with Tay. The episode is titled Give Alfre Woodard Her Flowers, where I actually talked about C a little bit with Alfre Woodard's on there. But we talked about tons of fun things. And actually, Fran, they talked more about Married at First Sight. And I think I'm going to give it a shot. I'm going to give it a chance. They were telling me about, like, you know, more of the black couples that was on there and some of the mess. And yeah, so.
Yeah, another show that Jade got me hooked up on. Because she's the queen of that. Get me to watch all that shit like Love After Lockup and 90 Day Fiancé.
So definitely check out that. And also, I was on See the Thing Is Podcast, their Patreon. So make sure you go to patreon.com/SeeTheThingIsPod and listen to me talk shit with Mandy.
Hey, Mandy.
And Bridget.
Hey, Bridget.
Did you sit next to Mandy?
I actually sat next to Bridget. Thank God she sat in between us. I learned this is, I think I brought this up
Hi,
a while
Mandy,
ago.
I love you.
Mandy, when she doesn't believe in science. It was a very odd conversation. But, you know, I love learning new things about my friends at all stages of life. So it was a very entertaining conversation. And Bridgerton and Harry Potter. And I know I could talk sci-fi with both of them. So that's really funny, especially since Mandy does not believe in science. Yes, it was a great time.
So, Sante, you actually have the Black Business of the Week for us. Would you like to let us know what that is?
That's right. You know, I love all Black businesses. I actually talked about this Black business a little bit on ETA. And it's very funny because this Black business is called Eta Leisure. If you want to check them out on Instagram, this is a blanket pretty. That I have from them. It's like this outdoor. I like that. Yo, I saw this and I said, I've got to have it. They're a Black-owned outdoor goods brand. They have like beach chairs. They've got this outdoor blanket that they had, which
I wrap that around me and wear that bitch like an outfit. Put a belt over that and a big ass hat. You can go to a festival.
Posted a picture of myself on Instagram swaddled in this.
Joshua Tree, right? That's Joshua Tree. Yes, that's cute.
So it's great to have that look and it be Black owned. So that's why I'm just like, oh well, hell yeah. You know, you see something you want, see it, I want it.
Have you showed that to JJ? That looked like someone in pants you'd be wearing. Nah.
you know, I'm gonna keep that in mind.
I have to check because I feel like I might have one of their blankets. I wonder if they did a partnership with Black Lady Sketch Show because HBO, you know, when HBO be sending you the promo packages. I had a blanket in a trunk and it looks very, very similar. So I gotta check to see. You said it's ITA.
Yeah, it's ITA Leisure, but it's Eta Leisure, but it's spelled out ITALEISURE.
Okay. I have to check. That'd be awesome.
LEISURE. Excuse me. Wow. That's jumbled cute. Letters. They are there. Yeah, so the website, if you want to check them out on their website officially, it's italeisure.com, or you can just go to their Instagram, ITA Leisure, but it's pronounced Eta Leisure. Get into it, Black people. We're outdoor goods, and it's luxury. Love that.
Perfect. I'll definitely be looking into that. So last week's episode titled Highly Functional. It was a shoot the shit episode. No hot button, no segments, just whatever wanted to come up. And as always, those of you listening had a lot to say. What stood out to you, Asante?
I already talked about this. I am so sorry, friend. I did this a little out of order. But back on the SoundCloud at the Friend Zone podcast, in the comments, I saw Ariane who says, y'all need to watch Married at First Sight, especially the last season. That's what I was referring to with Getting Grown, because they were telling me that this last season had the Black folks on there. And there's like the girl that they've been unsure about. And I was like, it sounds like there's some threads here and some things that I need to get into. So I have to, like,
I just don't know where to start.
I'm just going to start with this latest season.
Just start with the latest. That's what I did. I started with season 11, I think, or 12.
11? 12?
Yeah, they're like 13 seasons in, I think. I hope I'm getting that right.
Married at First Sight and 90 Day Fiancé are two totally different shows, right?
Completely different, yeah.
Okay.
That one is like people marrying for green cards, and then the person doesn't know, do they really love me or do they just need a green card? And then Married at First Sight is...
I already know, and I don't even know who on the show, but go ahead.
Married at First Sight is based on people who are looking for love, ready to get married, and this team of like sex experts and, you know, family and marriage therapists and coaches.
Oh, they just
puts
have the
them
wedding.
Together. Yes, and they get married, and they meet at their wedding. And they basically getting married, and it's just insane.
I heard there was a couple when they showed up to get married, they actually knew each other, and like the guy ghosted her in college. Yep. So I was like,
when they said that,
I was like, oh, I'm pulled in on that.
and their relationship is like really, really wild. So it's a good show. I wouldn't have went through with it.
I'd have been like, fuck that. Y'all cheated. Because this is supposed to be a bitch I ain't never seen in my life. And we got history. You know what you did.
What's crazy is when they said that, it was funny to me because I was like, it's crazy that they did all this research and they found this person from college. So it's like, what was the thread between y'all that had y'all captivated before to where y'all still ended up taking different life paths, but still ended up somehow doing the same show to end up being with each other, potentially, you know, I guess.
But he claimed that he liked her. He claimed that he liked her, but he was just young and not ready for what she was ready for. So it's not that he didn't like
her.
That's
fair.
He just wasn't trying to be locked down. I mean, they were in college, you know, and he's like, she was a little too serious, too fast type vibe, you know, which you'll see. Well, yeah, you'll see. She's very, very like, you know, and during the show. So it's understandable why he was kind of like, I ain't ready for all this. But now
he tell her, give me 50 feet.
That's the couple on this latest season, season 13.
Yep, the Asian couple. Well,
Arian, I'll be tuned
in. Okay, we'll watch it.
Okay. It's a good show. I mean, it definitely holds your attention. The only thing is that the episodes are wild long. They're like an hour and a half long. I'm like, who can watch this in one sitting?
Yeah, I smoke weed, though, so like, yeah. I might be able to
do like roll up content.
I might be able to sit there and restand. Ooh, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's a long-ass show, but it's good. Mm-hmm.
Spoiler alert for our friends in the gated community of Patreon. Mm. Hey, y'all. I finished The White Lotus because I couldn't take it no more. I had to know what was going to happen.
Oh, my God, no!
So I finished. And that's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to offer any commentary here. You know where those conversations exist.
You're so funny for finishing.
I haven't finished.
I had to know. So
okay, good. So you'll be able to help straighten the path as well as we go.
Right. And those of you that are subscribed, we will be covering episode 3 of The White Lotus tomorrow, and it'll go up this Friday. So I'm dead at you. That'll make it even funnier, though, because you know what went down. But speaking of the gated community, I actually have a comment from the gated community. Let me pull that up right now.
Yes, Fran, what did you found out there in them gated community streets?
So Sasha said, Fran, I can totally relate to starting to feel codependent on edibles in order to fall asleep. But how did you get your sleep schedule back on track? It was not fun. It was literally like withdrawal and detox in a sense, you know, because I just couldn't sleep straight up for like maybe 2 weeks, maybe a week and a half. My sleep schedule was just jacked up. And it was like fighting the urge to not just grab the edible so that I could go to sleep. I had to fight through the fact that I simply could not sleep. I tried everything, a hot bath, reading a couple pages in my book, waves crashing, you know, all the sounds, the white noise. I tried meditative music. I tried to go for a walk. I switched my workout to nighttime. I mean, you fucking name it. And that sleep said no. And then one day, out of nowhere, I was knocked the fuck out. And I said, this is a reminder that I'm going to take a break because I hate that. I hate the dependency, and my system happens to just latch on to THC that way. So that's why when I take breaks, I take breaks because of shit like that. So Sasha, I hope that helps, but you really just got to push through it. I don't have an answer for the best way to cope. I also have another one. Jen to the Fur on Twitter said, so I'm listening to y'all talk about apartments and houses and pets. Here in Orlando, a lot of places have breed restrictions, but let me tell you, my pit bull and I were out here like international super spies for 2 years. Sneak that pup, friend. Fuck him.
And I agree. Thank
international
you,
super spies had me crying because she said that she would purposely not walk the dog during the day so that the management office couldn't see, or she'd take some kind of back route and she just had to figure it out. I'm like, okay, you know, not saying I'm do that, but I hear you.
I'm not gonna lie to you. When I moved in, the guy showed me the place was like, you got any dogs, any animals? And I was like, no. And he was like, well, if you get any, probably just sneak it in. Don't worry about paying that fee. I was like,
oh shit.
Okay.
That would be lit. I'll let y'all know. Y'all see on my Instagram. But Dustin Ross, what'd you find in the Twitter street? Oh, and you know, I want to say one thing too. So our editor, shout out to Ty, he played the wrong version of Up Jumps the Boogie. A lot of people were like, damn, what version is this? But if you go back to the episode, it is fixed. Just for those of you that were highly confused on what the hell we played, it was the remix.
That's all right. Ty work hard. Shit. That's okay, Ty.
I emailed him and he was like, oh, okay, my bad. He's so funny.
Yeah, players make mistakes. Ain't nothing but a little bit of straightening.
Okay.
That's it.
And it's fixed and it's up. So,
okay.
You know, that's what that is. But Dustin, go ahead. What'd you find?
I want to give a shout out to, I don't know how to say it. Well, yes, I do. Your name is Shinobu Sensui. Mm. Whatever. Your handle is at iManstirs. I-M-A-N STERS, who said, "Somebody get my sister. She got ear shower caps for the AirPods." And it's a picture of her sister with this little shower cap over her ear so she can take a shower with her AirPods. Hell
no. Listen, you got to contain.
I don't understand people that really shower with their AirPods. I know a lot of people that do that. I'm like, so your ears don't get cleaned? How does that work?
I also want to give a shout out to...
If you take multiple showers, I'm just saying.
I want to... Right, and that is nasty, putting earpods in the shower. Get you a motherfucking... Just play the music on your phone or whatever.
Yeah, what is it? Why was I going to say blue five?
A beach pill? Shit.
A Bluetooth speaker. That's what I do.
Something. Yeah, me too. And if you can't play loud music in the shower, then you just need to wait because it's not worth it. It's not. You wonder why people's edges be bald to the sides and shit. That's from the little shockwaves from your AirPods in the down the steam. Y'all motherfuckers electrocuting your hair out the front of your face and head and wondering why you look like somebody pulling you from the ponytail everywhere you go. Gotta wear wigs and shit. That's why. Oh, take them goddamn AirPods out. Them waves and shit. Y'all don't know what the hell you doing. Scared to take the vaccine. But your ass got AirPods on in the shower.
I'm
sick of y'all.
Look, I was over here like, I too have worn AirPods in the shower, so
I'm scared too.
And to be honest, because we have been recording so much and I have been using my AirPods pretty much hours back to back daily, my ears have low key been hurting. And I'm like, I might have to go back to my other joints, just the classical studio, exactly, that you guys
old
have.
School.
Because my ears are kind of letting me know, like, hey, this little thing you're doing is not really working for us.
Sometimes you got to cook from scratch, honey.
It's true.
I just didn't want to be bothered with the battery dying on me. So that's why I kept it. Like, I tried it a couple times, and then, it, you know, every now and then it'll make that little indication on my ear. And I'm like, oh, we're too close to the edge. And, you know, it wouldn't die, but I'm still like, I don't want to play this game.
And the sliding out, too. Like, I'm constantly readjusting, which is kind of annoying. I feel like it kind of takes me out of the conversation sometimes. So I definitely might have to go back. I got to find where the hell I even put those. Where's my mascara?
Yo, girl, stop wearing your AirPods in the shower. And definitely don't do that in Portland. All that natural... people know, right?
Yeah.
About to say that. Okay, my bad.
No,
you know,
I don't
make that kind of mistake, so my bad. But because we was definitely finna edit that the fuck out. all that dance. I done fucked up the timing on the joke. It ain't even gonna be funny. I was gonna make a joke about all that flat land out there in Portland and shit. You know what I'm saying? Never mind. Back to the damn tweets. Shout out to Rated R&B, which is one of my favorite Twitter accounts to follow. But they actually said that Rick James's new Showtime documentary, which is called Bitchin', The Sound and Fury of Rick James, debuted this week on Showtime. So I'm definitely going to be checking that out. And I actually would want to throw that name in the hat of possible choices for us to review on The Binge over in the gated community of patreon.com/friendzonepodcast. For those who ain't got it yet, get with it. But that's where I would like to talk about that. So I just want to put that on y'all's radars. And the last tweet I want to give, because you know I got to give credit where it's due. Shout out to at Mia Tikowski, at MIATKOWSKI. Philip, who tweeted, the MTA announcing which trains are suspended and accompanied it with this video. Hold on. Because you know, God bless everybody impacted by Ida, but Ida towed the fuck up out of MTA. IDA wore out MTA. And
did
all
you see
the trains
videos? I was stunned. Did you guys get affected in your area? And like Dustin said, you know, I reposted some people in New Orleans, especially, that were sharing where you can get your phone and electronics charged, where you could get food. And of course, we'll be able to monitor those tweets as well and kind of keep them in rotation for those who are looking for help. I know some of us have been donating as well to the different orgs. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of you even been posting your Cash Apps directly so that you can get like direct help for your families. A lot of single moms were hitting me up. So My heart is with everybody. Right, yeah, they really do. So anything you can do, definitely keep an eye out. But were you guys affected, like your neighborhood or anyone in your life personally?
I know a lot of people in New Orleans. I have a lot of love for the city of New Orleans.
Same.
It means a lot to me. And everybody that, even like one of my really, really close friends, Carlton Morton, you know, he lives in New Orleans.
Oh, shoot. So
I've been in constant contact with him. He was able to evacuate. A couple of really important people to me live in New Orleans, and they were all safe with their families. But there were a lot of people who unfortunately were not. So it's a lot of people down there who need help. There's a lot of security issues now with people having to do what they got to do to survive, and people trying to protect their property and their things. So I think it's best if everybody just tries to share credible information, credible sources of information that are trusted and don't require nothing from residents other than for them to accept the help. You know what I'm saying? And that's really important right now, just to try to get out the word as much as you can to help as many people as you can. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was seeing the videos that people were sharing, even right here in Brooklyn, like in the Crown Heights area and New Jersey nearby, and Philly got hit super bad too. So mad love to everybody in all the affected areas. That was wild. I mean, the rain.
Right. Fuck you, Ida.
Man, the rain was not a game. We didn't get flooded out because I don't think I'm in a flood zone, but the street was definitely like next level. And you know, it was wild. People were still ordering food. I saw a lot of the
Why would you do that?
Yeah, like I saw a couple of the Grubhub, and that just was really surprising to me. Like I'm like, why would y'all put someone in that position? You know, that I didn't even think of that. Yeah, when I knew that we were getting that weather, because they had kind of sent alerts earlier that day, I just ran and got a couple of things that I knew would hold me over for the weekend. Because, you know, I am someone that will order all the time, but I was like, I'm not putting, every day. Literally. Yeah. So I was like, I'm not going to put anyone in that position because I know they will bring it, you know, and that's the worst part. People have to do what they got to do. Yeah, they got to do what they got to do. So I just wish everybody was as mindful.
I literally didn't order because of the rain. Like, I remember I was like, damn, today is the day I have to go to groceries. Like, because I was like, it's raining outside. I ain't going to, you know, I want it to come wet. I don't want nobody having to fucking swim for it. So I was like, fuck
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly.
I knew I was going to make me some breakfast. Because, you know, situations like that, you just make breakfast food because it's easy. Mm-hmm. And, you know what I'm saying? You gotta, yeah, like, so I just made me some pancakes. And y'all know my pancakes, we look good. You
so
know?
Good.
So, but I just made me some pancakes and stuff and chilled. Like, why the fuck would you even put somebody through that? The tip ain't big enough.
No,
you know
it's
what I'm
not.
Saying? To support that. It's
and
not.
For what? To get your slice of pizza? Like,
it's kind
of
heartless, bro.
Yeah. But, you know, like we said, our heart goes out. And if you have any links that you'd like for us to circulate as well, links that you know are reliable, please make sure to send those our way, and we'll make sure to post that on the Friends on Twitter and Facebook as well, and on the gated community, our Patreon, because we got to remember that that's also a built out platform.
We don't post the sex parties over there too, because it's VIP. No, I'm just playing.
I'm dead.
All the resources.
So let's jump into this week's episode. So everyone knows how much we just straight up love music. We tend to have music artists on the show so that we can hear their perspective on being independent or working with labels or doing a little bit of both and which one's better, how they come up with their creative process. But we've never
Beef with other artists.
How they beef with other artists. But we've never had a label head actually come on the show. And not just a label head, but someone who is equally as passionate about music, runs a label that's integrity centered, which is rare in this industry.
Don't exist, to be honest.
Literally doesn't.
It's outside of them.
And most importantly, Black owned. What a combination.
Amen.
You know, that to us, what better conversation could you pull from someone who is spearheading that movement? Not to mention the biggest reason we wanted to have LVRN, the Love Renaissance label, music label and artist management company on the show today. One of the co-founders, shout out to Sean Formoso, who will be pulling up in a few minutes, is because they center mental health in the conversation at their label. It's literally a part of their staffing, where artists have access to therapy sessions whenever they need it. And even the co-founders themselves, there's five of them, we'll break that down later on in the show, they also do group therapy sessions and not just, I saw, I think it was in a Rolling Stone article where he said, we don't wait for something to go bad or to be wrong. We do these sessions regularly to make sure that nothing goes wrong. So very excited to welcome our guest, Sean Famoso.
Emmy award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Welcome, Mr. Sean Famoso, co-founder of the LVRN music label and artist management company. Right before you came on, I was explaining to our listeners and viewers that we normally have artists on the show. Everyone knows how much we love music. We said that it's it's a fabric of our conversation. And we thought it'd be really cool to have a label head come on so that we can hear from your perspective on running a label, how do you sustain a label, and even just the different things that artists tend to complain about with labels. We'd love to hear, you know, and just it's a very long list, and just the overall fears and concerns that tend to come up with whether people should sign, should it just be management. So, but I want to actually start from the very, very beginning. Just who you were before this label even came together so that we can get an idea of how this came to be. So I was doing my research. You know, you were in Forbes, Rolling Stone, Complex. You weren't very hard to find. Right? They were explaining that you were a party promoter in high school. So is that where love for music started, or was it way before that?
I mean, the love for music started at home. My parents, like my dad, he's Jamaican, but in our house we had like these 2 6-foot subwoofers that we put in the basement.
Oh, sounds about right.
And the whole concept of these big ass subwoofers that he made it probably like the 80s, like the early 80s. And I guess the story is he used to have like this van that he used to drive around, and he used to put the subwoofers in them, and he would just bring them to different parties and like pretend to DJ. But nonetheless, like they found our way to our basement, and the whole purpose of them was to like rumble the house. So like we would have like these speakers that are like kind of everywhere, but like the whole vibration of the house came from the basement through these big ass speakers. My parents listened to everything, like, you know, everything from obviously like the super old reggae, like the early dance hall stuff, to Red Hot Chili Peppers. My dad bought me my first Jay-Z CD, so like they were very eclectic in that own sense. Yeah. You know, I just remember like falling asleep in the car to like smooth jazz and like Michael Bolton and Yanni and just like
well rounded.
Kenny G. Kenny G and everything in between. So I think my taste and just early appreciation for like any type of music done, you know, properly or done well or done in a very interesting way started there. But I mean, to your point, I think the ethos of, or the common denominator rather, of anybody that has had a certain level of success in the music industry you know, some of our favorite moguls, whether it be like your Diddy's or, you know, whomever, throwing parties is actually like, it's like a very common thing.
Right.
And I think it's because the idea of being able to bring people together and giving people a reason to come together on a constant basis or a consistent basis, and nothing changes. The building stays the same every week, wherever you're throwing this party, but you still have to give a fresh experience constantly, whether it be the music, whether it be the theme. And I think having that vision of being able to market in that way is obviously like the first stepping stone of like, you know what, like this is kind of interesting. And I think, you know, in high school is when I met, you know, my first business partner, who's obviously, you know, my business partner today, Tunde.
Tunde.
We actually didn't like each other, but we were rivals.
I read that too. We were rival party promoters.
So I grew up on like the north side of Atlanta. He's from the east side.
What high school did you go to?
I went to North Gwinnett.
Okay. I was out at Pebble Brook, so I was on the other side.
Okay. Yeah. So Tunde was from the east side. He went to Stevenson High School.
Oh, yeah. By Stone Mountain?
Yep. Stone Mountain area. So, yeah. So, like, we didn't like each other because I wasn't privy to some of the underlying ground rules of like being a party promoter and how you're supposed to let everybody in free if they're a party promoter.
Oh.
And like, just like that, I was charging everybody. I'm like, yo, I don't know you. So like there was a day in which like I charged Tunde and, you know, all of his people to get in the party, and from that day forth he just didn't mess with me.
It was war. They said she wasn't kissing the rings.
Right. So like, you know, and then once I learned those lessons, I'm like, all right, try to go to his party, he charged me. I'm like, all right, I know what this is. So I say that to say, again, like, but you know, we ended up joining forces once we got to college, you know, became best friends, and you know, the rest is history. You know, we threw some of like the biggest parties at Georgia State and just like in the Atlanta area. You know, we were just known for just massive 3,000 people. We used to do this party with a bunch of our other homies, Meezy being one of them, who manages 21 Savage. It was like a collective of like us that all kind of came up together. And Wasted Wednesdays was this party that we would do every summer at the Libra. And it was insane. But we had everybody from early Travis Porter to Waka, Gucci, Roscoe Dash. You know, this is like that time period of just like, you know, of Atlanta's next generation of, you know, musicians. And I think, you know, the way that we kind of like figured out our way into the industry is at a certain point, you get kind of tired of paying these artists these huge fees to come and perform two songs and drink up all your liquor. And then you become very curious what it's like to be on the other side of the fence.
Oh, okay.
And I think that is where our early interest in figuring out our way in that part of the business kind of came from.
Just real quick, because you brought up Roscoe Dash, you do a great job of keeping those artists in rotation as you, I guess, bring up your newer artists. I had to come to one of your concerts before. I say as if I was forced, but I really was like pulled. I had to come. Summer Walker was opening for Black, and then Summer Walker was pulled from the tour, and Ari Lennox ended up opening. But I was still enjoying the concert because, well, I still was. I was like, well, Ari's gonna be there, so even more reason to come. But I still want to see Summer. But damn, so being there and seeing Roscoe Dash and them perform was like amazing to me, because you were setting the groundwork of Atlanta been crunk. And then Black comes out and just kills it with his show, saying we still gonna be crunk. So what is it like working with artists that, you know, were established like that? And maybe because you're a club promoter experience, but what is it like working with artists like that and having the conversation with them to be like, you know, hey, can you open maybe co-sign for my new artist? Was it even like a co-sign, or was it just we here for the party? What's that like?
I'm so curious. What city was this show?
Atlanta.
It was in Atlanta.
It was in Atlanta.
So, I mean, I think it was
December. It was like close to Christmas.
Okay. So, I mean, I think for us, it's just like we really grew up with a lot of these kids. So, like Roscoe went to Decula High School, which is down the street from my high school. Travis Porter's first hit came from my best friend that I grew up with since seventh grade. So a lot of these conversations are literally in Atlanta itself is a city that I you know, will give my all to, just because it's one of the very few cities that reciprocates the energy that you give it.
Yes.
You know, like, if you put in 100%, it'll give you back 100%. If you put in 50%, it'll give you back 50%. The barrier of entry, in theory, is so low. And it's like, you know how they say, like, if you can make it in New York, you can make it anywhere. Right. If you can't make it in Atlanta, don't try anywhere else. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Because the reality is, it's like, it really is Southern hospitality. It really is a big high school. Granted, you know, certain areas have their problems with certain people and what have you, but the reality of, you know, the amount of camaraderie that our musical, class has is crazy. Like, all of the studios, even in Atlanta, are probably all within 5 miles of each other.
Yeah.
You know, you can go from Stankonia to DTP to, you know, Grand Hustle, all within, 10 minutes. And I think it's because of that, in that foundation that some of the, you know, the godfathers and godmothers have laid, is, the reason why it's become very easy for our generation.
Hmm. Yeah, that's definitely what I've noticed about Atlanta as a music scene. It always felt like a family production, and I remember when Atlanta became that city, because it was always New York or LA, New York or LA, and artists would have to come and work out of there. But then it became Atlanta. It was like, if you want to get your album done, you want to work with people, you had to go to Atlanta. And I remember there was a huge migration, like everyone from New York was moving. I feel like it was around 2008 where it was like really starting to kind of pick up a little bit. And that was cool to see, like you said, all the studios were kind of like a college campus in a way, where everybody was just kind of shuffling back and forth from artist to artist, studio to studio. And the culture is just very different.
For sure. My theory is, like, the cost of living and having fun is so much cheaper in Atlanta than anywhere else.
Right.
True.
You know, you can go to Miami and blow your budget. You can stay in New York and blow your budget and live in a shoebox. Or you can go to LA and do the same and not even see any black people while you do it.
Right.
So I think Atlanta is just, the accumulation of everybody's or a lot of people's, interests and vices, and where they are able to pull a lot of inspiration from, and it makes it a really healthy place to make music.
So I'm curious, you mentioned you and Tunde, and am I saying his name proper, because I want to make sure. Tunde. So you and Tunde were rivals doing these party promotions. You get together, find it interesting, trying to see the other side of the business. Where did you come to meet the other members that co-founded LVRN with you? How'd you guys link up?
Yeah, for sure. All at college. Georgia State was the nucleus of LVRN. I knew Carlin Jr. We all knew each other simply from throwing parties, because Carlin actually threw parties as well. Justice was just kind of like the hot boy on campus that, like, you didn't know exactly what he did if he really went to class or not. And Junior was the super smart one that everybody knew was going to make it out.
Right.
I think he got his law degree.
Dang, shout out
to
him.
I don't know. I gotta ask him. Yeah, shout out to Junior. At the time when I was kind of like formally, kind of really acquainted with Justice first, he had an artist named Rory.
Yeah, we know Rory. We love Rory.
Yeah, he had an artist named Rory, and Rory was 16 at the time.
Oh, man. And such a movement. Such a movement, yeah.
And during that time, Tunde and myself were interning at DTP. And what was kind of interesting is, like, we've always, into this day, like, there's always, like, a bit of understanding the art of, perception. So, like, we had not a dollar to our name, and party promoting isn't nearly as lucrative as we all make it seem. Right. But we had an office, we had an office in one of the most legendary labels of Atlanta. Ludacris knew who we were, he knew us by first name, and we used that as much as we could. So, like, I think just naturally around town, we were kind of known as those kids that had one foot in the real industry, but definitely a foot in the streets. So we got a glimpse of a lot of the new and upcoming talent, because we were like the go-to guys to be able to have those conversations. I say all that to say, this was very early days with Rory. So we all partnered up. The five of us just kind of made it work. We didn't necessarily know what we were doing. Actually, we didn't know what we were doing, but again, Atlanta's the perfect city to not know what you're doing, but really
to figure it out.
Your all.
Yeah. And how did you guys sustain? I mean, because if let's be real here, especially in Atlanta, everybody and their mom wants to be a label, has a label, is part of a label. But it's a very different story to actually sustain and become successful. So being that you guys didn't have any money, where did you get your capital to be able to fund even working with Rory? Like, I saw that you guys did guerrilla style tours where y'all would take him to the parking lot of actual tours and set him up and let him perform while people were walking to their cars, which honestly is genius. But like, where did, you know, how did y'all make this work with no money? Because I think that's probably the biggest question people who are looking to you and to your blueprint would have.
You want the like the real story?
Yeah, give us the real story.
I think resourcefulness in itself is the name of the game. Right. But so, all right, so we pay for Rory's first music video with $5,000 of what looked like blood money, because it's literally everybody's last dollars crumpled up.
Damn, real.
Pushed to the director Andrew Donahoe. He gave us what looked like a $60,000 video, but that was just based off of him seeing the vision. Mm. But rewinding even before that, it's like, to be honest, like, we're from Atlanta. Like everybody has some kind of like get money scheme and scam. Mm-hmm. So the truth is, Justice, Carlin, and Junior all worked at Nordstrom. In Nordstrom, if anybody knows anything about Nordstrom,
That return policy
is gold.
So your life.
I'm crying.
Gold. And if you have a friend like Justice, Carlin, or Junior, you can return whatever you want, even if you didn't get it the way you're supposed to get it.
Too real.
So that, right. So, you know, without saying everything,
right.
You have a friend go and get a bunch of stuff, however he wants to get it. He can bring it back. You can get the cash for it.
Basically, y'all were strategists, is what you're saying.
Yeah, strategists.
Yeah, okay, got that, man.
Financial strategists.
Right.
And to be honest, if you look at any of Rory's early photo shoots, shit, and some of Black's photo shoots, styled by Nordstrom.
That is...
So, you know,
timeless looks.
Timeless.
Yeah.
And y'all made it work.
So, you know... Yeah, no, but you know, and then, you know, we're also from Atlanta, again, the hub of Delta. I mean, the Delta Sky Lounge right now. But there used to be a time and period where if you knew somebody at Delta.
Buddy Pass. Why do I know all the ghetto shit you're talking about, man?
All of it.
Damn.
Yo, no, hear me out.
These are like Black basics.
You take it one step further, it's the companion pass.
That's the one.
So, you know, like,
That's so,
half of our friends that were getting jobs at Delta, you know, you go ahead and make a little situation with them, you get your companion pass.
$2,500.
Yo, these labels and major corporations were so confused how they have 5-6 Black kids pulling up to London at the drop of a dime. They're like,
from Atlanta.
Shoot. And
so
this is
tight.
Like, this is the birth of Instagram, too. So it's like, we make it look good. Like everything was super strategic. But at the same time, we're just having the time of our life doing it. And I think we were able to garner a lot of early just like fans in the industry and people that championed us basically because they just saw that we would do whatever it took to make things happen. And I mean, the last thing I'll say is like the reality of it, that I would say like the ethos of like any amazing idea is free. It's free.
Mm-hmm.
A great idea is free. The only thing that makes it bigger, or money's the only thing that you can do to magnify the idea, but the truth behind any idea should be free. You know what I'm saying? So we've made some bad decisions when we got money because we threw away the creativity.
Yeah.
You know, so I think, you know, sometimes that you should appreciate meager beginnings because that's when your mind is clicking. Sometimes having too many resources, it's like the paradox of choice. Like there's too much you can play with, and that sometimes messes it up.
So
I appreciate those days for sure.
Well, that's the title of the episode, The Paradox of Choice. Let me write
right,
that
yes,
down.
Right, yes, there you go. Speaking of the value and the importance of creativity, right? Shout out to Justice, first of all, and Black. I had the pleasure of sitting on a panel with them in Atlanta during the East Atlanta Love Letter promotions, right?
Oh, yeah.
That was super cool.
Great conversation. That was a really great time. But that was a great way to promote his album. And I noticed that that is something that is important to the Love Renaissance label, like just creative ways to promote the artists, promote their projects. What y'all did with the, was it Laser Tag with Summer Walker's project?
Mm-hmm.
You know, just all these different ways. And I actually have a background in experiential marketing, so my eye automatically picks it up. Can you talk to us about how, now that you do have access to many different resources, you know, y'all not necessarily on a companion pass no more, right? So how do you take advantage of those resources in coming up with new ideas and original ways to get people excited about your products?
Right. Yeah. I mean, for us, I think it's naturally where we get our rocks off. You know, we don't make music. I can't carry a note. I can't play an instrument. So for us, it's always been about how do we create this world so that the music has a place to live. You know, I think a lot of times people don't realize that if you paint the picture before telling them something or playing them something, that it can be way more, it can be way better received on the consumer's end.
So important.
Yeah, so like our whole thing is narrative design. It's like how do we tell a story or as much of a story as we can before, during, and after somebody gets the music, so that not only does it become their favorite song, but that becomes their favorite artist. And they know exactly why they're supposed to listen to that artist, because, you know, I always say, like, you know, an artist can't be everything to everybody. Like, the artist that you want to wake up to is different than the artist that you want to go to the club to. It's different than the artist that you want to make love to, cry to, whatever the case may be. So, like, once you kind of realize where you live in the majority of people's lives, you should play to that as much as you can. And you can take up as much of their life as you, you know, can design yourself to. But the reality is, you know, finding every album to be able to tell a certain story, have its own world, and to your point, create activations that are able to, you know, really capture, like, you know, the audience is the most fun. And I think during the pandemic is when we were challenged the most, because we couldn't touch people anymore.
Right.
So we had to figure out ways to still, you know, play with the, you know, people's senses without, you know, and still be responsible at the same time. But I think that's when we kind of tested ourselves to be like, are you guys really as good as we think we are? You know, I think we are.
Yeah, so. For sure.
No, you guys definitely are. Y'all did a great job of continuously putting out, like, Love Renaissance as a whole has such an amazing roster. You know, Summer Walker, Black, we've been fans of years from. Then, you know, we got the BRS Cash, the Throw Baby just coming out of nowhere. Like, you guys just keep doing it. What is it like, I guess, just choose your own adventure. How do you find artists? Do artists find you? What's it like deciding who to keep? How is it developing? Just take us through, like, a little bit of what that process is like when people kind of come to you with something. Or if you
so
approach
Justice,
them.
Right, so Justice, who's our A&R. All right, so I mean, everybody is obviously fans of music, and it's funny, like, we all know each other's taste. We all know exactly, like, who would sign what. But I think one thing that kind of stays consistent between all of us is we love acts that are left of center but still have pop potential and mainstream potential. And we've learned from our mistakes, because there's certain artists that we've picked up that were guaranteed to be the biggest artist in the world, but it didn't work because they wouldn't be the biggest artist in the world with us. Because what we need to do for an artist is very specific, that it's not one size fits all. And I think sometimes artists that do approach us don't realize that we were actually not the best fit for you. You know, like, Taylor Swift is huge, and I would love to quote unquote have it to the Swift, but it would never work like that.
I totally get what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying? So I think us as a company, it's been trial and error, and a lot of the times people don't recognize, like, people don't really see when you mess up. We mess up all the time. But, like, I think it's the understanding the DNA of the company as you create the company, as you grow the company, that's the most important thing. So you can have a better chance at you know, garnering or getting the right talent. So I guess to answer your question, like, you know, we find artists and artists find us, but we're definitely really big on development. Like, we don't really chase huge acts. Like, that's not our business model. That's not, you know, we want to be a part of the story. We want to get you before you develop those bad habits. We want to appreciate the 0 to 60. You know what I'm saying? 60 to 100 is fun, but 0 to 60. I love when an artist gets their first free box of clothes. You know what I'm saying? Like those moments are cherishable. You know what I'm saying?
That's so real.
I was talking to one of our new artists. His name is North Ave Jax. He was texting me yesterday. He's shooting his first video with us this week, and he said something. He said something so humble, and I said, "Yo, I want you to screenshot that, because after you make your first $1 million, I want to show you that same text and see if you feel the same way." But yeah.
And so
we're still having fun.
I'm curious, with Rory essentially being like LVRN's firstborn, and I know that I read in the different articles that things just didn't pan out because there were just a lot of challenges, as would be with the first artist of the label. You're literally figuring things out day by day with him. If you could go back now with the knowledge that you've accrued in these past couple of years, what would you have done differently with Rory?
That's an amazing question.
Thank you.
I think the reality is put our foot down. And I say that because put our foot down to the label. The label at the time was Columbia Records, and Rory came out at the worst possible time for an artist of his blended genre.
Right.
And I say that because this is the year that streaming started, basically. So you have these artists that are popping off of SoundCloud, a free platform that anybody, mother, brother, sisters can upload music to. They're getting discovered on SoundCloud, they're going viral on SoundCloud and YouTube, and then as soon as they sign that major deal, the label's telling them to pull everything off of SoundCloud, because now we have to upload it on Spotify and Apple, because we have to monetize. And not only is that the conversation, the labels are also at war with these streaming services, because it's the Wild Wild West at the time. And imagine being a brand new artist, being at the whim of challenges and battles that are so much bigger than yourself, that, mind you, you're not making trap music, but you're from Atlanta. You're not making pop music, but it's alternative. And, you know, like, you're a mix of the Alabama Shakes and like you're all these different things. And at the time, radio's still important, so they don't know where to put you. Like, so I feel like what we could have done different is really stuck to our guns and, you know, not taking certain no's or whatever the case may be. But the reality of it is the time period just wasn't conducive for a Rory.
Right.
But in that same breath, I know there's 100 other artists that it probably wasn't conducive for, because a lot of us were going through the same challenges at that same time. And the reality is, another thought, now that I'm just kind of thinking out loud, is that he has such an independent mindset.
He does.
That,
and sound.
And his goals are so much bigger than being the biggest artist in the world in the way that we may see it as a company. That, you know, his goals are better aided by somebody that doesn't need checks and balances of any sort. And also the company that wants to support any one of our acts in the way that they want to be supported. Sometimes that support is, you need to go and do that.
And who was the next artist that you signed? Was Black, or was it Shelly?
Yeah,
Drum.
That's an amazing question. It might have been like almost simultaneous.
Wow, what a cop!
I think Shelly was a little bit before. I think Shelly was a little bit before, but definitely like the same time frame.
And I know Justice brought in Rory, because you said at the time that was the artist he was working with. But where did you guys connect with Shelly and Black to bring them into the LVRN ecosystem?
So Tunde found Shelly on Pigeons and Planes. I think the very day that he dropped One Epic Summer, which was like just like his first ever piece of music. He got on a plane, and flew to Virginia.
That was dope.
That same weekend, I think he might have reached out to Shelly on Instagram or Twitter, and sat with them. He got into business as management. He flew back that same day, and it's funny when you hear Shelly tell the story. It was so mind blowing to him at the time. He's like, "Yo, this man got on a plane same day." And you know, again, like, you know, compare your time.
That's so tight, right?
And then Black is, he's actually had like a lot of like an underground buzz in and around our community. Like, you know, we were always like the kind of weird left of center, like, you know, hipster kids that it's actually interesting because like we did parties in the hood, but we also did very, very off the wall parties like Broken Bougie with Fadi Akeda.
I remember those parties.
Yeah, and I like
we live dual lives,
and I think that's part of why like we're able to kind of like, you know, slip and slide in between all these different conversations. But we knew of Black, but definitely was put onto him by his best friend, Diamond at the time, who worked in and around where we did through parties as well. And yeah, I mean, it was like a match made like very, very quickly. And you know, the rest is history. Like he moved in with the guys. We called it the West Side Bird. It was like this shitty little apartment on the West Side. We stayed at the crib for like a whole summer, just making songs every day. And it's funny because, you know, he was just staying on the couch, and every day or every week he'd watch, you know, us go in and out, flying to London, France, tour over here in Australia 3 times, and you know, but he just stayed the course and just recorded every day, like never complained, never showed any signs of just you know, concern. And you know, I think when we put out Free Black, it was, you know, it was the accumulation of everything that he kind of worked for in his life up until that point. So you know, it's really just like, you know, even just telling these stories, really just, it's crazy to just think about, because I was just with Black maybe 2 days ago. I was just with Summer a half an hour ago. That's why I'm late, Summer. I mean, just like seeing where, like, you know, some of our favorite, you know, acts come from and where they are now is just like always an amazing feeling to be able to talk about.
So speaking of where you come from, bro, I can't let you, because I know our time is limited with you, but you so Atlanta, you know what I'm saying? I got to ask you the question. Who's on the Mount Rushmore of Atlanta, Mount Rushmore hip hop of Atlanta? Who's the four
Ooh,
people?
Ooh, that's a tough one.
He might have to fight after this.
And yeah, Outkast. Yeah. Outkast is one head, even though it's two niggas. So I give you that. You good. Yeah.
So my Mount Rushmore is Young Thug.
Okay. That's big. For you to say that, that's big.
It's Jeezy. And I can't do Jeezy and Gucci, but it's purely because after seeing that Versus,
yes,
I'm like, not only does Jeezy have these amazing records that scored my high school life, but his ability to like put it on and his strategy in that moment let me know everything I ever needed to know. So Jeezy's on
there.
I agree.
That was my takeaway too.
So the name Love Renaissance, I was reading that.
But I got two more.
Oh, you do? Okay.
It's a Mount Rushmore.
It's my Mount Rushmore.
I'm like, was it Young Thug?
I gotta put Outkast on there for number
of
three.
Course.
Okay.
The double headed.
And then all of Love Renaissance for number four.
All right.
Oh.
Y'all have it.
The name Love Renaissance. So I was reading that Justice came up with it because he just felt like y'all needed to make it cool to be in love again, you know, with the trap music, all the different hip hop acts that were out, especially coming out of Atlanta. It was like, where's the soft centered, soft hearted music that you guys wanted to push? So was it something that you all felt and just agreed on? Like, this is going to be the theme of our label.
Nah, for sure. I mean, I think it's okay to represent the other side, you know, and we come from a generation that loves toxic interaction so much that we forget to appreciate the other side of it. And in 2012, during that time, it's like literally, you know, Future's just now breaking and all of these things that we are 100% a part of, just like everybody else.
Right.
But it's okay to digest and to dive into the other side just like anybody else, because who doesn't want to end up in love? I know you want to do whatever you want to. I know you want to have your holiday summer now. I know the city boys want to do what they want to do now, but who doesn't want to end up in love, right? So yeah, and then, you know, like there's like a second generation of, you know, what we want to do. Like, you know, we're putting out a project called Love is the New Gangsters. Mm. And that's the accumulation. It's literally what Love Renaissance is. And it's us kind of playing on the nostalgia of what, you know, the early gang days in the 80s and 90s was. But the reality is there's like a certain, you know, romance to like what gang culture is. You know, like there's like a brotherhood to it. There is... you know, so many just iconic photos and moments that you could see the love in it amongst everything else. And, you know, us taking that and putting it on top of R&B music is just like something that we're working on. I probably shouldn't have said that.
No, but, you made so much sense, man, because it's crazy looking at like the roster, you know, talking about the acts that you started with Rory and Black, and then for you to go from this R&B, you know, left of center, as you keep referring to it, but like it's so dope because it was like, Rory was doing that folk music, and then Black is still giving you...
So refreshing.
Yeah, it was very refreshing. So to go from that and then to fast forward all the way up to... Because I know y'all have tons of, you know, artists you've worked with and on, but to go to, like, BRS Cash and OMB Bloodbath and be so hardcore. So to hear you talk about a project where y'all are, like, marrying that, it's, like, it's dope. Like, everything that y'all do over at Love Renaissance is so dope. So I'm excited, actually, for that, just hearing from you saying that. So everything you said more than made sense. It speaks to how you guys present over there. It speaks to how some of your artists are. Like, you know, Summer Walker,
for sure,
she has her antics on the gram, but it doesn't take away from once she hits the stage, whether it's like watching her on YouTube perform. I'm like getting my life because I know that she is quarantined and she is comfortable because she's just about to get through this and she ain't got to touch nobody afterwards. I'm like, well, power to Summer. I'm enjoying this for her because I know she's enjoying that.
Yeah. Nah, I mean, you know, her album is done. I just left a meeting of us planning on when and how to put it out. It's the album of the year. I can't even. I wish
you.
I was talking shit.
Can we get
a
listen? Like, can we get like a love listening session? You know,
man,
an LVR and listening party,
the love lounge.
Honestly, no. Yeah, no. Let's set that up.
That would be tight.
I've got the email.
Now, Asante.
Now that we got Donda out the way, we got CLB out the way. Like, you know, so
Asante mentioning Summer's antics, but it actually made me wonder. Like, you guys don't get involved in how your artists choose to express, because I know with the artists that are on the more the bigger, kind of more traditional labels, there's so much control there on how, what they can say, how they can, you know, present, what they can do and what their belief systems are. And, you know, they kind of have to hide behind the label. But it seems like you guys don't really play that, because Summer says what she wants, Black will say what he wants, everyone just doing what they want. And it seems like all y'all are worried about is that the output is there and the songs are great. And so how does that work for y'all?
Sometimes we get the Summer text of what she's about to post before she posts it. Like, you know, it's truly a freedom of speech thing. You know, it's not in that same in the same right in the same breath. You know, I think we've all seen that it's freedom of speech, but you have to be accountable for what you say and what your actions are. You look at the baby. You know what I'm saying? Like, say what you want. But now you have to read what you said.
Yeah.
But I think for us, the most important things are our artists' mental health at the end of the day. So if what you're posting, what you're talking about, seems like it's coming from a space that we need to come and check on you, cool, it's time to step in. You know, that's why we've implemented like our whole mental health department, because you know, we lose so many young artists, actually young and old, to things that you wouldn't naturally understand. Why is drugs and overdoses such a, you know, a common thing? It shouldn't be common. why suicide so common, it shouldn't be common, anxiety so common, obviously. So I think, you know, the same way we take care of our bodies by going to the gym or eating properly, like, you know, maintaining our mental health is important. And it's like, I feel like people don't, like, you know, we have a company therapist that, you know, speaks to anybody from our artists to anybody in our staff and in between, but it's not about fixing you. It's about maintaining. It's like working out.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, you don't, it's not about having to have a six pack. It's about making sure that it doesn't go crazy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we stay out the way. We stay out the way until you give us a reason to not stay out the way.
Right.
And, you know, we'll come sit around you in a circle and kumbaya until you're good.
And that's actually the perfect segue too, because one of the biggest things that pulled me to you and how you run the label and just LVRN as a company is the fact that you do center mental health and you have yes. therapists that are on staff, and the artists, if they need to have a session, they have access to it whenever, wherever. And I also mentioned before you came on that even as co-founders, you know, I read an article that you have group sessions and you don't wait till shit hits the fan. You have the session so that it won't hit the fan, hopefully. Or if it does, you have the systems in place that will help you know how to work through it. So where did that come from that you guys were like, yo, we want to bring this and integrate it into the music label that we've created?
Because you don't hear that. Like? Does it mean it's somebody in the office? Like if somebody calls somebody on staff a motherfucker, is it somebody in the back like, hey, I heard that. Get y'all ass in conference room B. Let's work it out. They're like, what does it look like?
That goes to our HR department. But nah, I mean, I think, you know, it comes from having signed a few artists that have issues like social anxiety. Mm. And us having to educate ourselves or trying to educate ourselves on exactly what that is. Mm. Because, shit, 2 years ago, you say that you have anxiety, they twist their face at you.
Right.
Now, it's a little bit more understood to the point that you can be understood. So when you have artists that suffer from certain things, and we know that we've never been educated enough or trained in order to deal with those things, the next best thing is to figure out who can. And then you start to look around and realize, wait, why isn't it as readily available
right.
as we would
right.
have thought? And outside of just this one artist or two artists that may need help, shit, we need help.
Right.
So I think, you know, figuring out how to do, and you wouldn't believe the amount of red tape and just politics that it goes into being able to try to create something so progressive and healthy for your company that you realize why it hasn't been done yet.
Right.
But I say all that to say it's a growing process. I don't think we have it perfect yet, but this is us starting something so the next company can take it and make it even better and make it even better. But yeah, I mean, we have a full mental health department.
That is so
everybody
dope.
Has their days and their hours.
Revolutionary.
As a team,
it really
yeah,
is.
As a team,
really
we
is.
Do therapy. And I think a lot of what we take from our sessions are our communication styles can be so different that really understanding how to learn, listen, and then re-deliver to people helps on so many different levels. And you can stop a fire before it even starts based off of how you approach something.
Exactly.
And because it's one thing if I'm only getting therapy and I'm given all these tools, but if somebody doesn't react to the tools the way I want them to, then it sucks.
Right.
So when you as a team all do it, you guys can understand where each other start coming from, whether best friends or not, that everybody collectively wants to make this thing get better and better and better, that you know that you're working with people that only want things to progress. So it's been a beautiful thing, for sure.
Have you noticed a difference in the music since they've had access to these therapists? Like, is the music? Because you know what's funny? People tend to like their artists sad and fucked up and toxic. You know how there's always that joke where it's like, oh, Mary J. Blige, like, oh, this is about to be a good album now. And like, we do it jokingly when people break up. And you see, even with Summer, like her situation, everyone's hyped because they're like, this is about to be a good ass album. And it's like, we don't even realize what we're putting on these artists and hoping that they're in shitty mental health spaces so that we can get a good product. So I'm curious, now that you've provided them access to mental health practitioners and, you know, experts, how has it changed their output, if it has?
No, I swear to God, I was talking to Justice about this yesterday on the plane. And I don't think we've seen the full effects of it in music yet, but Black actually has a song in which he says, it's not out yet, but he says, I had to talk to somebody on the outside to deal with what was going on the inside. Mm. So, like, you know, like, I think even in just how people are starting to address what they're going through will start to change. But that's a good question. I mean, shit, our label might crumble because everybody's going to be too happy. But I think for the greater good we'll be all right. But I mean, Summer's album is, again, incredible. Black's finishing up right now.
Oh man,
Shelly's back in the studio.
What a roster, Sean.
Cash is working.
What a roster. Like, damn.
How did you pivot or what made you do holiday music with Shelly? Because him and especially the track with his mother was so like beautiful, such a great contribution to the holiday season.
Man, I think we just had everybody in town. And then Miss Lisa, whose name is Summer, told us, she's like, y'all should do it. Like, she's our aunt. She's like, y'all should do a holiday album. And literally, we did that holiday album in 2 days.
Oh, shit.
Literally did it in 2 days.
Talent. That's what happens when you have talent.
Yeah, nah.
I want to say this.
A couple Christmas trees and lights.
While we got the floor about Shelly, right? I have always said, because I'm a day one Shelly fan, before it was Shelly, you know what I'm saying? I've always said that Shelly needs to literally like score a Broadway play. Shelly's music is so theatrical. Like, to me, it's just a natural progression. Like,
I like
Shelly
that. That'd be dope.
Going to Broadway, like that, like scoring a production. That just, sure. Just put that bug right here in Shelly.
I'm writing a TV show for Shelly and Boogie right now.
That's
what's up. Can't wait to audition.
If you've ever been in a room with Shelly, and if not, I'm gonna make it happen. Thank He's you. One of the most like, just like, electric people ever. Like he's so much to handle, but in such a loving way that like he speaks like a poet. Even just in random conversation, like the
you
words he
tell.
Chooses to use just to describe things is just no matter what, you find yourself smiling, or even if he's mad, you're smiling. He's just like, he's hilarious. For sure.
So I know that you guys jumped into a distribution deal with Interscope, right?
A joint partnership. This was back in like 2016.
So did that freak you out a little bit, where y'all like, ooh, because you know when labels start jumping in and everybody has an opinion and then things have to kind of shift around? But
man,
what made y'all do that?
I mean, the reality is, it's like every time we started managing a new act, every label, we would find an act, we would manage it, we would put everything that we have into it, money and everything, and every label would come calling because we knew what we were doing. We knew how to develop talent.
Right.
And in theory, what we would be doing is finding an act, blowing it up, and then
giving it away.
Selling it.
Right.
Giving it away. So at a certain point, and this is actually now that I'm saying this, we did sign Shelly before Black, because at this point we had Rory and we had Shelly. When it came to Black, we finally had some money in our pockets. We finally had the hang of this whole thing, and we're like, we're going to do Black independent. We know what we're doing. And I remember even we sent around like a various special email, because every label was calling in, but at this point we know everybody. We ran the gauntlet a couple of times, we know everybody. So we respectfully sent out a very wide email, personally to everybody, like, We don't want to jump on your planes and spend all your money, go do the song and dance and right. You know,
all the fancy kill everybody's dinners.
Teeny budgets. Right. Nah, like you know, we respect y'all enough to let y'all know we're gonna do this one independent. And they were like, cool. And then Joey Mando, Joey AI from Interscope at the time, he FaceTimed me when we were leaving Apple Music. And he's like, yo, man, like, you know, I understand I want to do it indeed, but, you know, just come see me. Come by the office. Respectfully, he came by the office, and he was like, he sat us down, and, you know, he was like, the reality is we've missed out on every act that you guys have so far grown up. And at a certain point, we have to stop thinking that the only talent is the act. Mm. In that the talent is also you guys. So instead of signing Black, let's do a deal together in which we can all empower you to be able to sign Black and anybody and everybody else that you want to. If you guys are over here, so you can really create a business, and sooner or later, you guys can be the next Interscope, the next Bad Boy, the next LaFace, the next Motown. And that's how it happened. And if you think about it, Interscope is a label that has thrived off of partnerships. You know, they're the ones that created the aftermath. You
right,
know,
like, right.
50 Cent's label, you know what I'm saying? So, like...
They get it.
Yeah, like, you know, like, partnership is in their DNA. Mm-hmm. So, and I think, you know, the more you... Labels are only scary when you don't know what you're doing.
Right.
Or when... Yeah, like, labels are scary when... You give them the ability to tell you what you think you should know. They're not scary because they're like these big, mean, bad people. They're scary because if you show signs that you don't have a plan, their plan's not going to be better for you.
Right. So, and they'll sniff that out real quick.
Yeah, they'll sniff it out. But the reality is, like, we were operating as a label before we even knew it. So our entire system of the way we develop acts is what labels do. So once we had our deal, it was like, oh no, we're gonna just keep doing what we do, and they support us when we need it, they step back when they need to, and you know the relationship has been harmonious. So you know, I think you know, between Joey, Steve Berman, John Janik, it's always been an amazing relationship for sure.
What a blessing. Dope.
Says a lot about the value that your company has in the label's eyes too, that they are willfully, mm-hmm. you know, respecting you to have control, you know, artistically, creatively, and still maintain ownership. So shout out to y'all, man. That's dope.
Man, thank you.
And you recently signed Division. So how did that come to be? Because they're so tight. We've been playing, well, Dustin's been playing their songs the past couple weeks, their new project with Ty Dolla $ign. So how did that come to be?
Man, yeah. I mean, you know, from like a management perspective, I think we've learned that there's a real beauty in being able to kind of foster a community that our artists and our acts can benefit from each other, whether it's from like a touring standpoint, even from a festival standpoint. You know, like there's times where we're like, oh, like if you want this act, then you know, you're gonna have to put this one in there too. Right. So, and even deeper than that, like, you know, we've been fans of the music forever. And I think when the opportunity came about, it was a no-brainer. And it's sometimes it's such a beauty working with musicians that are seasoned,
right.
or like have a certain understanding of it, so that what we do is an add-on of value. You know, it's not us having to strip away and not like, no, like let's help you guys get to the level that you dreamed about or dreamt about since your last album. You know, wanting to be a little bit more you know, visually present, wanting to kind of get out of the niche of what, you know, you've been known for before, and really just kind of like, you know, help blossom. So, you know, Daniel in 85 has, you know, I was just with them 2 days ago in LA as well. Like, we're really present in our artist's life.
Right.
This isn't like
y'all see them.
Right. Yeah.
It's not just email.
Yeah, we'll see you next year. Let right. me know when the music is done. Like, nah, like, we be around. So, yeah, I mean, the OVO team has been amazing as well, so.
That's so tight. And with artists being left of center, I know that you guys must have a hands-off approach, because really that's the only way you can work with a left of center artist, just kind of letting them find their rhythm, their new sound, what they're birthing with each project. Do you, but like, what's the gray area? Like, do y'all have to reel them in to be like, okay, this still
needs left to center.
Okay. Y'all just down with whatever.
The thing is like, there's such a common respect that we have for each other that we understand each other's opinions and notes.
Okay.
And granted, sometimes it needs to be taken with a grain of salt, depending on who it's coming from,
right,
or what the situation is. But we can be as hands-on or hands-off as they need us to be, but, you know, you only sign to LVRN because you understand what you think you know about LVRN. So you kind of sign to us for our opinion. You sign to us for our, you know, creative input.
Right.
You know, you sign to us for our storytelling, for our activations, for our AMR work. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah. So, like, yeah. But, real part.
Because I just wondered, like, I know with artists that are, even like artists that do have anxiety and kind of like have to be in their own little bubble to make it, I wonder, how do you work with that energy to make sure they feel safe and, you know, heard, but also keeping them on track? And do you consider things like, will that work on radio? Will that work in a festival? Like, I'm just curious how you maintain, you know, the thought process for all these different moving parts.
Yeah. I mean, Tunde is really good at that in the sense of, you know, being very upfront about managing expectations.
Got you.
It's kind of like, if you want to be this, then here are the steps that we think will get you there. You say that you want to be this, but you've been doing this. Now, this isn't bad,
right?
But it will get you here. So
Fair. Be
honest with yourself and us, so then we can put together the best plan to help you be the best person over here or the best person over here. And I feel like that's not a one-time conversation. That's a conversation that you have constantly as you get to the next letter, as you get to the next step on the ladder. He does a really good job at making, you know, every one of our acts feel comfortable, but also giving the reality of what we have to do to get here, to stay here, and to move forward.
Since we're in a pandemic still, I guess, trying to figure out where we are. I know, like, pre-COVID, y'all were touring, y'all were out there. And then once the pandemic started, we still got a lot of great YouTube content, as I said. Watching the Love Renaissance Gang rap in a bank and the vault, that shit was super
awesome.
Oh, yeah,
the cypher. I didn't see that.
So without giving us anything specific, you know, because, you know, I know you just said Summer's album is done and, you know, y'all got Division on the roster now. What types of, well, I'm trying to ask this question, but I know you're not going to be able to answer it.
I see you trying to walk around.
What kind of like visuals, what type of interactions, activations can we look forward to? You know, like, I feel like you guys are so intentional about everything that you do. Even the team, when they gifted us some stuff from Summer, you know, there was a plant in there and some mist and spray. So, like,
love that.
And then for Black's project, the hot sauce. So I'm just wondering what types of, you know, activations type things might occur with these things happening on the horizon. And even OMB Bloodbath, you know, it'd be cool to see something with that too, you know?
Nah, for sure. I mean, OMB, we put together a bloodbath ambulance and rode it around Houston, giving out like school supplies to the kids just a couple weeks ago. But yeah, I mean, you know, you could look forward to a Love Renaissance album coming soon. You can look forward to some activations in the mental health space for our community. You can look forward to activations that support single mothers.
Amen.
You can look forward to... what else? You can look forward to a lot of work in the film and TV space.
Always love that.
We're putting together.
All the verticals.
in product, you know, like, you know, well, you know, I'm a Virgil stan. Like, I think his ability to collaborate on such a high level with so many different brands, but also in so many different mediums, you know what I'm saying? Like, I want to make dinnerware, I want to make furniture, I want to make, you know what I'm saying? So I think, you know, the beauty of having momentum and, you know, garnering a certain amount of success in the space that we're in, helps us to jumpstart all these other, you know, places that we just have natural interest in. So, from, you know, creating, you know, new TV shows and you know, audio, you know, platforms to, you know,
You said you wanted to make furniture and stuff. Were you responsible for the Life on Earth when Summer, or was it Clear the EP when Summer performed with like the little vibey section? They had the pillows and stuff all around.
I was not.
I was gonna say I'm about the furniture then.
That's not my decor. I'll send you my move.
I'm all here for it. I mean. Like we've been saying, the roster there is tight and everything that you guys do is so intentional and amazing. So it's dope to hear that even with, you know, the new stuff that there's going to be more cool activations to look for, but they're intentional activations. So I really like that. I really appreciate that.
I think that's dope. And my decor is actually comedy. So if y'all need somebody to make niggas laugh in them TV and film projects, holla at your boy.
They know where to find you.
I would definitely hit
that. Well, Sean, this was literally the perfect conversation. Once again, for those who may be unfamiliar, this is Sean Famoso, co-founder of LVRN, the music label and artist management company. Before we get out of here, if there's anything you'd like to say to those listening that are definitely going to be hitting you up and asking you a million questions about your life and just how you move, anything you want to bless us with before we get out of here.
I don't know. I guess a quote that's been on my mind lately came from Tyler, the Creator's manager, a couple years ago, and it's been sticking with me most recently now in the midst of, you know, rolling out some new albums. And it's, the quote is, plans for tomorrow change today because of what happened last night.
And I think
that I've been sitting with that so often in the last couple of weeks, because, you know, you can put the world together, but, you know, but somebody might tweet some shit tomorrow that you gotta change some shit. So I think in any aspect of your life, so, you know, sometimes just like, you know, you might be marching towards a destination and, you know, have to pivot. And sometimes a pivot isn't always a negative thing. I think sometimes a pivot is really just literally opening yourself up to more opportunities. And, you know, sometimes we can all get stuck in our, what we think is supposed to happen versus embracing what's supposed to happen. And that's how I've been feeling lately. So.
I mean, damn, that was perfect. I couldn't ask for it.
Thanks for the tattoo, bro.
Sean Famoso, in case you ain't know, so we just appreciate you so hard for coming through and hitting us with the knowledge and the intentions, man. It's dope.
And the plan, the blueprint, you know, because we really view you as game changers. We love music, we love mental health, and you have found a way to bridge both worlds together, which has been long overdue. We care about these artists. We want them to feel good while they're creating as well. So I feel like what you're doing needed to be amplified. And I'm hoping, like you said, that other labels run with it, make it better, improve on the design, and so that we can just continue to make good music out here. So we thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
Those of you listening, as always, we love you so much. We'll catch you next week.
Stay black and protect your magic.
Bye.
Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.